Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? That's Stevie. That's an old classic Stevie right there, my friends. We can work it out. Stevie Wonder. I don't know why I said it like that, but that's Stevie. I'll make you say it some kind of way. This is K-Son and Friends. I'm K-Son. Citizen Payne. Eric Payne. You know. Last name is the same, at least anyway. A lot of stuff happening in the past week. Yeah. You know what I've learned? I like to watch a lot of YouTube. I'm big into YouTube for a while. Since, what, 06, 07? Something like that, right? Not too long after YouTube came out, you know, the website or whatever. And what I liked about it that, you know, you could find it on all streaming services, but at YouTube, not only you could find episodes of old TV shows, which are now commonplace on all these streaming services, but you can also find all kinds of obscure things, TV commercials from different decades, obscure documentaries, promos for TV shows, trailers for TV seasons, because back in the day, you just had the three networks. You don't have all of the content and platforms and streaming, viewing, TV, internet, all that stuff. Just the three, which reminds me of a point that somebody made today on CNBC I'm going to want to talk about in a second. But because of that, you could see all of these, you know, like your favorite, like, episodes of so-and-so, or like, what I used to be a TV head, you know, all of us used to watch TV back in the day, and just, you know, I guess eventually people have become actors or writers or movie makers or whatever. I would like to watch what was going to be coming on with the new television seasons for certain networks. You know, if, you know, I watch a lot of ABC shows or NBC or CBS shows, you know, I was always interested in seeing and trying to get the TV guide. Remember, I used to get the TV guide, all you old ass, you know, get a TV guide and see what was going to be coming on in the new TV season. I can remember, I think it was in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken, if I don't mind showing my age a little bit, that was a big thing, TV guide and People magazine and all kinds of stuff like that. Those magazines were big. Entertainment Tonight came on the air, you know, real kind of a constant reporting of entertainment, like it was entertainment itself, you know, back in the day. And I'm going off on all kinds of tangents here, forgetting the overall point I wanted to make. But back in the day, the TV shows, something like Entertainment Tonight was talking about primarily the business or whatever movies and what box office were doing in terms of the numbers. So that's why I would be interested in watching it. The same thing with the E! Channel. E! Channel was kind of more like, we'll tell you box office numbers and, you know, E! News, tell you the news and what's going on in the industry, who's getting what deals, the kind of things that you're reading about on the content providers, the Deadline and Variety, and all the stuff you would read in Variety, you could see on the E! Channel. But all that stuff, you know, streaming services now has broken up the whole image of TV, and there only being a couple of places where you could see TV shows and all of these obscure places. I mean, all these obscure shows and things you wanted to see. In that, the point that this person was making on CNBC, which I thought was very interesting, was that there was always a cultural kind of touchstone, their word, where the country had all, we all watched the same thing. We all experienced the Roots, right? The Roots, the miniseries. We all experienced that together, fortunately. We all experienced Tonight Show, people. This was all, it was on TV at three networks. So pretty much, you know, these shows that were juggernauts, everybody could talk about them on the Monday morning. Everybody had the same experience. And that was kind of something that connected people, because at least there was a commonality of what was going on in the culture and how you can maintain at least an awareness of, you know, broad section, cross section of information and cultural identity, I guess, in terms of the country as a whole. But now, obviously, with all this different content and all different providers of content, you know, you got the conservatives, extreme conservatives, that the reason why they don't know anything is because there's these content providers, these places they can go to see everything that they want to hear, everything that they agree with, everything that they only think about, everything that, you know, just tells them that they're right. There's no objective anything anymore. And that's part of the thing that it seems like the Republicans want to keep going, right? They don't want people to get educated. They don't want people to vote. You know, the whole concept of these guys storming the castle, I was going to say the Capitol, the whole concept of that, because Trump told them he was stealing the election, and all this is three equal forms of government. And that's something that people would know if they were aware of the truth, right? Co-equal branches of government. But I got lost on my original point, but you guys know where I was trying to go, at least some information in that area. We're going to discuss it some more with the fellas. Here's Byron Saunders, our legendary historian. Byron, how you doing today? Got a lot of business.
Grace and peace, brother. You know what this week is all about. And I'm going to start off by saluting your mom.
Yeah.
This is the week. And it set us into she handed the baton to us on air. I am the courage. I find that to be an extremely courageous moment in which I'll never forget, because it impacted on who we are, and her wisdom continues to flow through us. It was a moment that was live drama. You remember it, I remember it, Wayne remembers it. So here we are, and I send this salute to your mom, because this weekend, Eric, I've been taking an independent poll wherever I go. I just got back from New Orleans yesterday, and I took a poll, independent, just asking people, because two things that I recognized that were exploding with energy – excuse me, exploding with energy, positive energy, was number one, it was Father's Day weekend. And fathers stood up. People were posting tributes to their fathers that I hadn't ever seen post a tribute to their father. To their mothers, yes. To their fathers, acknowledgement. Second, think about this as a slave. On watch night service in a church as if it was Pentecost Sunday, December 31st, 1862. And on midnight, those churches, those places of Underground Railroad, even in Texas, huddled in a quivering fear, because on the strike of dawn, 12 o'clock, 12:01, being free. What does that mean? The fear to proceed toward freedom. And my independent survey, even today. I just got to come from Outback Steakhouse, and I've been asking all kinds of people, Eric, did you notice anything different this weekend on social media in people's demeanor, our people's demeanor, a revelation of something we ain't seen in quite some time? Now, how long it lasts, that's up to us, because the energy bursting through acknowledgement Juneteenth. Now, my best friend, my college roommate, was from Texas. He would tell me stories about his mom who worked at a country club in Texas, Houston, serving people. This man went on to be a full professor at University of Florida. And he acknowledging every Juneteenth, the celebration. We just getting a taste of it. It went national. It is a national holiday. And it happened, Eric, instantaneously. Part of which we got to acknowledge, because yes, it didn't come with reparations. Yes, it did not come with a 40 acres and a mule. And yes, we didn't even get a damn watermelon for the celebration. But you know what we got? We got a moment of lifting the bondage of slavery from our minds. And it was like it was a holiday, a freedom day. And I ain't seen that. And I mean, everywhere, because of course in D.C., but in New Orleans, in the places where you least expect it, people just liberating their minds and themselves, saying, okay, what do I do next? And yes, the voting rights issue is paramount on the page. The infrastructure issue is paramount on the page. And here's one of my surveys. It's gas work going on right in front of my house, Eric. And I asked the gas man, brother, I said, yo, brother, man, what happened up the street? What's going on? How come y'all are up there digging and pounding and waking me up at 8 o'clock in the morning? Well, we got a little gas leak. I said, oh, y'all putting Band-Aids on the infrastructure that needs work, right? He said, absolutely. Well, I know that makes y'all maintenance people, and they continue to give you Band-Aids to cover up crap because the infrastructure is failing, and it's guaranteed to keep failing because it's built upon crap. Now we got a chance to fix it. And I was like, yo, brother, man, do you realize what's going on? Because if the infrastructure bill is coming, you get a raise. He says, I know, I can't wait, I can't wait, I can't wait. What did you do this weekend to celebrate Juneteenth? He says, but did you know? I asked him. I said, did you notice something different? And when I said it, he's like, yeah, man, what's going on? I said, people are understanding that they have a mindset that just took a link out of their chain to bondage. And when that happens, you don't know what to do. Just like in 1862 at midnight when it struck and you all of a sudden like, I'm free. What does that mean, being free? Well, it took 2 years, 2.5 years later for the Texans to tell the slaves, 250,000 people enslaved, that they had been freed. Well, what does that mean? Because ever since that happened, the delay between 1862 to 1863, 2.5 years later in Texas, meant that they were constantly the idea, GOP, and God bless them. And then I sit here and I say, Mississippi, goddamn. GOP, goddamn, because you have been an abomination and you're the new Confederacy. Make no mistake about it. Stop calling them GOP. Call them the new Confederacy.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Yeah. You just reminded me of my original point about YouTube and watching those videos, amongst other things. First I want to say, let me just go to YouTube point. The YouTube point I was trying to make originally, if that you can go to really obscure things and see old news clippings and old TV shows and old news programs. And if you go to ones like decades past, you get a sense of what was going on in America, like you're talking about, like we always talk about. And you get a sense of what type of tactics were being used. Certainly in the Reagan years I'm talking about, Recently, I was watching the Kings documentary about the boxers, Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvin Hagler, and Tommy Hearns. And they had a little bit of Ronald Reagan in there because they were breaking down where they stood historically. And I had seen these videos, just like I've talked about. You can go and see Dr. King on Mike Douglas and things like that in these various clips. But you get an idea of where America stood at that time. And you get an idea of what issues were being debated, of course, and the tactics. Yeah. If you look at the commercials, you look at the commercials, you get an idea of what tactics they were using. And certainly you see a pattern of the same tactics being used nowadays that were used back then. If you pay attention when you watch some of these old news programs, that was the point I wanted to make about that. Let's bring Wayne in before we jump off into other things. Wayne is like in the middle of the city. New York City's a mayoral race. We've got Brother Eric Adams. Looks like he might be the winner. Wayne, how you doing? Legendary newsman, Wayne Gilman.
Yeah, I'm hanging in here, gentlemen. I have to say, I don't want to sound maudlin, man, but, Byron hit me again with a kick in the gut about your mom. I didn't realize 2 years have gone by. I don't know why I'm thinking it's around Labor Day, but it was just before the 4th of July.
June 23rd.
And, thank God, 19 months cancer-free. Anyhow, moving on. The deal is that I'm trying to gather my thoughts. The thing is, everything that Byron just mentioned, I echo. I mean, there was just it happened so quickly with Juneteenth. I think that's the thing that really got to me, because I didn't, it was celebrated actually on the very Friday. I tried to go into a federal building to handle some business, and, pay my car fare to park the car, and, I'm walking down downtown White Plains to the courthouse, and all of a sudden it just dawned on me when I got to the front door, that they were closed. I said, well, why are they closed? Thing is, President Biden, just the day before, almost the night before, had signed the legislation making it a national holiday. When I juxtapose that with the struggle, Eric just pointed out a moment ago, the climate in this country 30, 40 years ago, when we were fighting to get the King holiday, there was all sorts of demonstrations, protests in the street. Mm-hmm. I remember at the station we tried to get Stevie Wonder to come in and actually campaign in different venues, United Nations building. We made this a global event, and Arizona was the last state to drag its feet, but eventually it went through. And I thought that was a miracle. And it shames me to think
I'm just chiming in real quick. They had the big event at Radio City Music Hall to celebrate that they televised, I believe. Remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it was monumental, and and here it is years later. It doesn't, to me, it still has a significance, but it's become so commercial. It's like, Wall Street and big businesses has taken over, and I fear with what's going to happen with Juneteenth here, I fear it may later become the same thing. We have to remind ourselves that we can't get a decent education in critical thinking. We have to remind ourselves that this discrimination in getting a mortgage. We have to remind ourselves that we're being shot in the freaking streets by the police. Are we really free? I mean, the first time I heard about Juneteenth, it happened during the course of my work at WLIB. I invoked the memory of the late, great Chuck Sutton, who was one of the Sutton family members, who was an executive. Family is originally from Texas. I just said this story a couple of days ago on the air. And the thing is that I didn't know the significance of it. Anybody growing up in the East had never heard of it.
These slaves were already free. But go ahead and make your point. I want to piggyback on that. Go ahead and finish making your point.
No, the thing is that, we've come a long way. I mean, I don't mean this as a joke, but, had there been social media back then, everybody would have been aware. And, as a society, we have come a long way, but we still have so far to go. And, you know, and I feel that we're in a seminal moment now with all the configuration of all the different events that are going on, you know, involving our culture, our status, our democracy is still on the freaking line after an election. You know, we're still going through, it's not as painful as it was, you know, the last 4 years, but damn, you know, every time you wake up, you just wonder. And I mean that Republican Party. And one thing I want to say, I don't know if he's a guest or not, I saw what they did to your cousin the other day. I found that thing freaking despicable on the part of the media, you know, to try to make fun of somebody as to whether or not they're doing the people's business because he was caught off guard, you know?
Yeah,
and I just think that's, you know, I don't want to start cursing, but I was about to throw a freaking brick through the TV when I saw it.
Well, I'll get into that in a second. I'll get into that and explain what happened with that. And when you guys talk about Juneteenth, what I noticed about Juneteenth, you know, like we were saying, that the slaves on this end of the country were already free, and the ones in Texas didn't find out about 2 years later. I didn't find out about Juneteenth until my adult life, 40s, in the 40s probably, too, which is ridiculous. But I like the unity that once you found out about Juneteenth and other black people in other parts of the country whose families migrated to other parts of the country found out about Juneteenth, there was a real nation time, for lack of a better phrase that is escaping my mind right now, but a real sense of unity is what I'm looking for amongst all black people to say, we weren't free until all of us were free, right? And so the celebration and the push for it as a national holiday, because that's when the rest of the slaves are free. The majority of slaves were already free, right, Byron? So
here's the concept of freedom that we must understand. What does that mean?
I don't want to get into it from an esoteric standpoint, but I want to get it to...
But not esoterically. I saw a documentary the other night that depicted it squarely, hit the nail on the head so hard. It's like, okay, so you got freedom, and then the next day you were subjected to almost immediately.
Right.
So there was a period of the Jim Crow moment in which under
before Jim Crow, because right after slavery, it still was the night riders.
Because you went into sharecropping, you went into ownership of land, reparations for the return of your pledge of allegiance from the Southern aristocracy and the Southern farmers to come back into the United States.
So before you get too deep into that, with all that, though, they were still a little bit more free than the people in Texas, right? That's what I'm saying. They was able to walk.
No,
they were still in bondage.
What that meant was it came in gradual. It came in gradual acceptance, because it just to have even the ones who escaped and were born free, still had to navigate. Remember, 12 years a slave. He was a free man.
Right.
He got picked up off the streets of Washington, D.C.
So once the law went into effect.
The gradations of freedom came based upon, were you able to sustain yourself financially to be not a vagrant on the streets with nowhere to go, no job, but you were free. Grades of freedom.
Right. So
not
when you were...
Not instant freedom.
Right. So when in these degrees of freedom, when we get to the extreme, Texas was on the final leg, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
If I'm
still in chains and some of us are walking around, at least with the chains off, I know it's that kind of argument. If you pull the knife out of my back 3 inches as opposed to five, but still, if you are still in chains and you're looking across the street at the cats that don't have any chains on and it's still hard, it's like, okay, let me at least get to that level. I see it's a struggle there. But
they didn't have a long time to make that choice. See, that's the part that we don't understand, because we think of it as it happened instantly. No, it didn't. Because the person who was, or the vagrant on the street who was now free, had no job, had no place to live, because the owner threw him off the streets and put him out on destitute row. And ultimately, he ended up having had to do things to humble himself to save himself and his family.
Right. So
and
the flip
those
side
things
is
became an irritation to the white ruling party. It didn't matter whether you were Republican or Democrat. The white establishment began to make coded laws to keep your black freedom ass off the street.
Right. So
like,
and keep you still in bondage,
terrible.
But just find a legal way of doing it. Now the laws have changed.
Exactly.
So we're still finding a way to keep you in bondage. Right.
And
which is what
still
which the gradation
happening.
You're talking about has been going on right for 400 years. It's just different levels of it. Exactly.
Yeah.
As far as what happened with, or let me just speak about Susan Pope real quick to move on to another subject, because we're talking about so much stuff. Time is flying fast. But Susan Pope is a dance education teacher. She's going for a master's degree, I believe, at Columbia College. I hope that I'm saying all that. I'm speaking off the top of my head, but Susan contacted me about doing I guess her graduate project on my mother. And she had heard about my mother, the dance education, the dancer of reputation of my mom from several people. She'd been thinking about doing this for a couple of years. Actually, at the time, my mother was still alive when she first thought about it. So as a happenstance would have, a serendipity or whatever you call it, she mentioned it. She's from Jersey, so she began to know people that knew us, that she was really like would see on a daily basis. Reverend Aisha Marable was a good friend of the family and helped us during the time my mother passed. She was a good friend of my cousin Kim's, and they had a dance ministry together. And so she's a good friend of Susan, and Susan was saying, you know, I've been hearing about this woman, Kay Thompson, who was a dance teacher and educator in Newark and did all these things, and I wanted to do my graduate project on her, and I just need to talk to someone. And Aisha told her, she had already interviewed my father as part of the Elders Project and the New Jersey PAC, didn't know that was my father, and didn't know that Reverend Aisha was as close as she was to my family. And that's how she found out that my mother had passed. But in doing this, contacting my sister and I and doing the research and talking to people about my mom and her days as a dance instructor at Thompson Dance Studio, and also as a teacher, an English teacher, and with WLAB, she put together a project, and she's felt a real connection to my mom and just the stories and just, you know, kind of an ancestral connection. And she spoke about a dream that, you know, she had a dream about my mother one night, and it's really touched her.
Mm.
And it's really a good project, and she's going to be sharing some things. She's talking about making the project maybe a little bit larger and doing a documentary. But there are all these paths we're crossing, or the signs were leading her in the direction. She heard about my mother through Gwen Grant, my aunt, Dr. Gwen Grant, who was also a dancer way back in the day. She happened to be one of her colleagues in the graduate program, just happened to be my first cousin, or my first cousin's daughter, who happened to just ask her, well, so what are you doing your project on? And she told her, she said, oh, my God, that's my aunt. So we look forward to the project. I'm going to get Susan on the show to talk about that. But, yeah, it's been second year anniversary of my mom. And on Monday was that. So time flies a little bit. As far as my cousin's situation, yeah, he didn't know that, it was a Zoom call. And the video function, he thought, was obviously enabled as he was getting ready to appear on camera, is taking part in the committee meeting, so on top of a lot of other things, my cousin's dealing with diabetes, and he's a diabetic, deals with dialysis. I think it's fairly public knowledge. I mean, people see him at dialysis. So that's part of what he does three times a week, about 4 hours before the pandemic, when those guys were in session, when Congress was in session, he would get up real early morning and get it done, and then go to work. And some days it's committee meetings, some days, you know, try to work around the schedule. If the day couldn't be as grueling, the more grueling days would be his off days. But as a result, anyone who knows is dealing with that, there's a lot of other health issues that people deal with. In his case, there's a lot of other things that are as a result. And he doesn't sleep as well. And so his schedule has been modified since they've been working out of home, so maybe he's been moving the dialysis back further in the day. You know, he doesn't sleep at night. So I imagine, and I know that he was just, while participating in the meeting to prepare himself to get on camera, thought that the Zoom function, you know, everybody's had those Zoom malfunctions. So, and actually on top of that too, it wasn't really a meeting that was open to the public. So that pretty much can tell you, lead you to the fact that who would take a picture and release it to TMZ? And if you look at the video, you see that his colleagues, I think Yvette Clark and Val Demings are in the shot. They wouldn't do that. So who would benefit from embarrassing a Democrat in a private Zoom meeting, a committee meeting? You know, I think you have to look at
that. Well, you see,
and there's a number of things.
The same tactics that were being used post-construct reconstruction. These same tactics, the playbook is no different, fellas.
Exactly.
I'm a historian. I can tell you they're doing the same thing. Well, it doesn't matter what party. Like I said, the party of Lincoln is now the party of Strom Thurmond. The party of actually Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee is now the party of Joe Biden. So don't be confused. Don't get it twisted. We're talking about a playbook that has not changed.
But
it's 300 years.
I tell you, Byron,
it does matter the party right now. It does matter the party. Let's not leave people with that lasting impression. It does matter the party.
But it is the
Republicans.
See,
but let's be clear about that.
The Republicans
might not be as
astute
in the weeds as we
are. They really are. We must define them not as insurrectionists. That's a misnomer.
Right.
Either they're Republicans or Democrats. Now, were there Democrats who were storming the Capitol? I would bet a dollar to every $1 million put on the table. You won't find one.
What were you going to say, Wayne?
No, I just wanted to say that, you know, it was a non-story. It was a non-burger, man. You know, they always use that expression. And I didn't even see it on TMZ or FYI or Fox. It was a matter of entertainment. I was channel surfing, and then all of a sudden they came up with this. I noticed Yvette, and then, you know, I was so taken back. And the thing that really bothered me the most is that they were questioning whether this man was doing the people's work. You know, that was the one thing that came out. And I'm just saying anybody could have been. I myself, in front of my doctors one morning, was caught off guard like that. It happens. This is a new phenomenon. I hate the webcam. But the bottom line is, you know, President Clorox put us in this position that we have to interact this way. And I just thought it was just a low blow and highly unethical and unacceptable for an entertainment. I mean, this ain't entertainment. The man was doing the people's business, whether he was butt naked or not.
They could be brought up. Whoever, at least there could be ethics for doing stuff like that. But I don't know if we're gonna. My cousin wants to really pursue that. But you know, that's how they're rolling. And then, like you said, this is the Zoom age. People have mistakes, but also too, they like to present things out of context, right? So within the context of Congressman Donald Payne Jr., and if you know anything about him and his reputation, and the one big thing that most people know about him from an image standpoint is his bow tie and his style of dress. His style of dress is he prides himself in looking sharp and looking a certain way. That's been his misnomer or his kind of rep since he's been in the House. Initially, they were calling him, like, talking about he was one of the best dressed guys in Congress. So my cousin has always been like that, and even if you look at some of his Instagram messages and things like that, he always makes sure he's sharp. His bow tie is his signature. So within the context, you have to say, would a guy like that really just be totally ill-prepared for a meeting like that? Would he just be goofing off? And then you have to also look at his record, which is really the main thing you should be looking at, about the amount of bills that he's passed, the type of bills that he's passed, the type of work he's done. So, you know, these people like to present things out of context. I was really disappointed in that Wendy used it as fodder for her show, Wendy Williams, because of the relationship of our families and our mothers supposed to be best friends. And one thing I learned about, not only about the industry, entertainment industry that I'm in, as well as just being around and exposed to things I've been exposed to the course of my life, you can catch people in embarrassing circumstances, embarrassing situations, if you want, if you're that type of person. But there's a bigger thing called integrity. There's a bigger thing called, you know, having some honor and respect, certainly for family members and people that are go back generations with your family. And I understand that that as she probably, as they chopped it up in her producer's room that day talking about segments, they probably said, you know, shouldn't do it. I don't know if she went back and forth. And then somebody probably said, well, they're going to be talking about it anyway, so why not us? But that's the thing where you draw where your integrity lies, where there's certain things of making fun or finding enjoyment in people's misfortune is the type of person that you want to be. You know, I could have a lot of embarrassing things just to get likes or views on my IG to talk about stories or instances or have pictures of people or know things about people that I've worked with. But, you know, it's a code. That's why I don't speak about actors embarrassing things or, you know, I would never do that because it could be you one day. And also there's just a code of honor and respect and decency that you should have. And that's what, you know, a lot of people don't have it. And it is what it is, but you would expect it to people like that were helped along the way, like my mother did when Wendy's father brought her by the station, Wayne. I'm sure you probably remember she was in college.
I know her history well.
But, you know, but hey, you know, some people, you know, nothing is sacred to some people, so right on for them, you know.
Yeah, I've been victim of her vitriol, too, I mean, in terms of family members, but... You know, I tell you, I don't even, I tried, I'm glad that she's a black woman and she's making money and all that success, you know, but as you said, it just, you know, draws the line. It was a throwback to Bob Grant talking crap about David Dinkins. To me, the whole situation reminded me of that 30 years ago because Dinkins, like your cousin, was always immaculately dressed. Three-piece suit, dark suits, and stuff like that. And Grant would get on the breeze and call him a men's room attendant. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he would just juxtapose that image. Yeah, and your mother used to beat up on him all the time for that crap. You know, so I mean, it just took me there, and I'm just saying, wow, man. You know, yeah. I mean, Entertainment Tonight. This is entertainment.
Yeah, you know, people like gossip and things like that. Like I said, some people, they enjoy in other people's misfortune or laughing at other people. And, you know, I guess that's gossip and stuff. That's funny to a certain degree. But, you know, I don't know. Well, if that's your thing, that's your thing. But that's not necessarily mine. You know, I can't say that I haven't laughed at people or gossiped about people. But I don't think I can tell you it wasn't one where I was trying to circulate it or get on, you know. I mean, you put yourself out there in certain circumstances, right? Actors put themselves out there. Anytime you put yourself out there in the public forum, you have to expect that. You put yourself out for presentation. I don't know whether politicians that are trying to do certain – well, I guess they put themselves out there too, obviously. But it just depends on how harshly you judge people, you know. I mean, you reality show people, they put themselves out there in a certain fashion. I'm thinking of the Kardashians mainly, so people have judged them a certain way and – You know, people are able to use exposure now is everything, whether it's good or bad exposure. And people can find a way to use the bad exposure if you have an issue. You know, my cousin is using it to bring a light to the issues that he's been fighting for, the issues of diabetes and the kind of treatment and techniques that are new and available to people that have diabetes. Used it to bring attention to, he wanted to put together, he put a bill into Congress for a pay increase for frontline workers during the pandemic since they were working so hard. And he had it, I think it extended to all frontline workers. So not only hospital and doctors and firemen and all, everybody was on the front line, but also if you lived in Texas and people were fighting the floods in Texas at that time, or if you lived in California and the firefighters that were fighting the fires at that time, that increase in pay would have affected them as well. And so they would have been had an increase in their pay as well. That's why people need to pay attention to politics and understand how they work. That sometimes, you know, people live in one area of the country and they have similar circumstances that you might have in another area of the country. And so when you have someone working on an issue for their constituents in another country, it might in another state, it might benefit you in another state because there's similarities. That's why it's the United States of America. So you can take advantage of stuff like that in one country, you know, and the lunacy of states' rights that this argument reminds me of, that there shouldn't be certain areas where we have one uniform law or way of doing things. I'm talking about voting, something like voting,
right,
or something like the school system or what's really education. There should be one law for it all. And we see that these people clearly don't want certainly voting even discussed. They didn't even want the voting bill even discussed, I believe, on the floor of the Senate the other day. They didn't even want to debate it. And you know,
see,
go ahead, Byron.
Historically, yeah. Historically, and this is where we have to go back to the rule of law. We don't have another choice. But historically, the only way the southern states and the southerners got back into the Union, they had to swear an oath that the federal authority over states' rights existed. States' rights, excuse my French, is bullshit. They don't have the authority. It's a federal law.
Right.
States cannot overrule federal law. Period.
And I might add, the Attorney General already made a statement about that already.
But how many people know that? That's the whole thing. That's
the
whole thing is the PR, right? I mean, we know it because we're fucking, I mean, we're coneheads, we're boneheads with this stuff. I mean, you know, the very educated and the political class and political education and political awareness now is becoming a lot more prevalent in society. Certainly, unfortunately, you know, there's outlets and platforms that twist that information and just make shit up straight up. But at least we have people that are aware, or the information is out there for people to be aware of how our society, our government works. Too often, I heard this police chief out of Houston, Arcevedo, I think, Chief Arcevedo is good, he's the police chief, but he was talking about, you know, the politics being played with the gun issue, and some people play into the base and do this and do that, and he said Congress needs to act on it. And too often what happens is people look at Congress as one broad monolith, right? And people need to start paying attention to the politics and to the Congress and to elected officials like they do their sports and their players, and keeping the stats on who's who. Because it's not Congress as a whole, it's the Republicans. So when individuals like that talk about, and they have them on these shows, and they're talking about how difficult their job is as a police officers union and this and that, and when you want to say whose fault it is, who's making our job harder, you can't just say the monolith, big or broad group, because then we don't ever get any props. This is how the bad guys keep winning, because people like that say to Congress, no, it's not the Congress, it's the Republicans in Congress. You know,
right.
People need to be as a student and aware of what's going on with these elected officials and what's happening with their representatives as they are with their sports, their players, and who they follow in the stats. Maybe that, you know, let me just present that to society. Maybe that would be an easier way to have politics like ESPN. Maybe we can be the ESPN of politics and just talk about the plays. And it's the same thing if you break it down that way. You know what I mean, Byron, when we're talking about Robert's rules of parliamentary procedure and how some procedures are used to keep certain things from moving. So we can't even bring the debate to the floor. We got to debate on the debate and make the this and that. You know,
exactly.
So these are techniques that are used.
But see, what it did expose, and this is why it's so important to pay attention. Don't pay attention to all the talking heads and the forever prognosticators. Pay attention to the methodical way in which our foundation is really being put back together. Yes, brick by brick by brick. Because the one thing we have learned, and we must give credit to the constitutional genius of Barack Obama. 73 times they tried to overthrow the Affordable Care Act. 73 times, gentlemen.
Wow.
And because he's a constitutional scholar and the most brilliant of all the judicial people on any court, including the Supreme Court, you've got bona fide charlatans pretending to be jurists.
And therein lies the problem.
Well, they've delivered us some favorable votes. You talk about the Supreme Court. They delivered some favorable votes, surprisingly, which would
they had no other choice.
Well, hey, listen, I don't even expect that from them, Byron. Listen, even if they have no other choice. We see what they're doing when they have no other choice, when they seemingly have no other choice. They're doing crazy stuff.
But see, they come up with a bogus rationale. That's all it is.
Duh.
If the Democrats aren't enough to cut, see, right now, right this very moment, if they did three things, I guarantee you, you could put a clap down on this thing just like that. Now, did we just get a weekend celebrating another moment in freedom that happened just like that? Pay attention, America. You want to put an end to all this BS? And that's not my initial. You know what I'm talking about. Put an end to it. Issue 147 warrants of arrest for terrorists and treason. It is in your domain to do it right now, post hate. Stop playing the game of political chicken.
Yeah, that's a good move too. But I think what's a more pressing issue is the restriction on voting rights that all of the states and the Republicans are putting forth in all of this, the state legislatures across the country. I think that's really, if we're talking about issues in order for priority, I think right now, that's why Mitch and those guys are just trying to gum up the works until the midterm elections to see if they could flip things and see if a lot of these things go through, these bills go through, these restrictive voting rights bills go through in these states, and if they could then use that when they pass, if and do they pass, to flip the House.
Yeah, but here's something you recognize what's about to happen. It doesn't matter what the Republicans do, because on July the 15th, mark it down on your calendar, it is a seminal change in America. Every family is about to get $2,000 through child credit. It doesn't matter what party you belong to, and the states right now can't stop it because IRS is issuing the checks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I agree with you, Byron, but, you know, sometimes we have an election and a lot of us suffer from amnesia, you know, and it's unfortunate that it's like that. Sometimes it just depends on what the climate is in the country nearing election day. So, I mean, Biden's numbers, they're saying now, his numbers are through the roof. It surpasses anything that Donald Trump ever had in the last 4 years. But, you know,
okay.
Democrats have their work
right.
cut out for them, man. They have got to beat the drum up until the midterms and beyond. You know, they have to see, they have to let people know what's at stake.
But Wayne, we're about to go through a reopening of our country on the educational system, and come September, after Labor Day, a full-blown opening of schools all across America are the full plan to move ahead. And you know what's going to happen starting July the 15th, when those checks start coming in so kids can parents can start buying their school supplies and getting ready. I'm telling you, you think anybody's going to get that money back? The body politic is going to waken to an understanding who is
who holds their best interest. Yeah. I got you.
Of course. Well, I mean, to me, once again, the Democrats just have to make sure this is the issue, like I always say, their PR campaign. You know, got to get out there and continue to do that and be as good as these guys are that are lying. I mean, we had and also let the public know about it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't have known about Lloyd Austin and General Milley, you know, their response to, you know, the Republicans' attempt to say misinformation. In the committee hearings today, both of them had to ream out the guys that were questioning them. I think Matt Gaetz was on the end of both of them.
Oh, please.
But it was really fantastic. But we got another 10 minutes. Let's talk about the mayor race over there, Wayne. So what's your assessment about things?
It's interesting. Eric Adams, who's been around and very made his presence well known before becoming Brooklyn Borough President during his years of activism in the New York City
right.
Police Department. He was frequently a guest on WLIB. There's some members of the department who are not pleased with him, and there are some, and I'm talking about people of color because he split from the Guardians to form his own group in there. But
were the Guardians the already existing black police officer group?
Well, it was historically from I want to say going back to the 30s. I don't have that information off the tip of my tongue right now, but I know that historically that group has been around ever since they started recruiting blacks for the department. We didn't have such large numbers, but the issues started way back then about the racism and the
right.
double standards. And Eric, you know, felt that they weren't doing enough, and I'm now quoting the retired chief of police, Bill Chapman, who I've had on, you know, to talk about the issues. And, you know, I guess if anything, Eric has been able to garner the support of people of color in the boroughs because of the rise in crime here. You know, it's just one of those things. And the deal is that de Blasio doesn't seem to have his handle on the problem the way he should. There are a lot of people who felt that Maya Wiley, civil rights attorney in the Southern District at one time, worked for de Blasio. Then a lot of people felt that she should have been the candidate of choice. Then you had Catherine Garcia, former head of the Sanitation Department. And Andrew Yang was actually leading the pack from the very beginning because of his presence as a presidential candidate. And what he was looking to do was to, give the poor a monthly or weekly stipend to get by. And, you know, something that Martin Luther King came up with 50 years ago that has never I have to say Ross Baraka just recently instituted that program, quiet as is kept in Newark. So it would have been great. I would have loved to see that come here. I don't know if Eric Adams is the candidate and he's successful in the race against, it looks like, Curtis Sliwa, who is someone I've known for a long time. I used to give him a shot on the air on LIB back in the day. I think he filled in. He and his ex-wife, Lisa Evers, yes, thank you. Used to fill in for your mom from time to time. But I don't know which way this race is going. I was surprised that Sliwa was able to garner as much Republican support. And I noticed our disgraced former mayor, America's mayor, Rudolph Giuliani, was by his side at one of his campaign stops.
Right, I saw that.
You know, it just bothers me. And Fernando Mateo, he's another one, you know. You give these guys exposure, and then they go in their own direction. And proudly, you know, talks about his love for Donald Trump. Like he doesn't have a clue, you know.
Yeah,
and,
but Trump boy with Rudy was with Curtis Sliwa, so they're both.
Yeah,
guys.
Right, exactly.
You know?
So I mean that sealed the deal there, you know.
Right.
And I mean no disrespect to the Dominican community, but these people have not gotten to the point where even Puerto Ricans are as far as voting in the system is one of the problems. You know, so instead of going out
when
there,
when you say these people, what do you mean?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry to say it, but I hate to put it that way. Forgive me. Thank you.
The Dominican community have not gotten
yeah,
to the point where they could vote what way now?
Well, I mean, a lot of them are just not embracing the same things. It's a cultural problem. You know, many of them have come to this country. They've become immersed. They're very upwardly mobile, very progressive people in one sense in terms of making money. They're very ambitious. But I don't think they quite understand the political system here. And a lot of them have been caught up in the same problems that that other Latino members
right.
of our American society have been a victim of. I'd like to see the day one day where Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico get their stars on the flag, man. You know, it's just way too long, you
right.
know. But I don't know if this, you know, the mindset, I would like to say, rather than being critical, I should say that they need to be reared in such a way that they understand, you know, what the meaning is of in the importance of a democracy, because I don't think of, you know, Donald Trump in the same sense as maybe a Fernando Mateo does. Maybe he applauds the fact that Donald Trump has made money, but he's ripped a lot of people off. I don't think he studied the man. I just think he found a way.
The nuance is for someone that might be new to our political system, and certainly from just a, you know, the actual workings of it, as well as the historical of our society as a whole, you know, going to be, I found when I've seen candidates like that are missed. I think certain nuances are missed. Also, you know, there's a certain amount of colorism and racism within the Latin community. We know lighter skin.
Oh yeah.
It, whoa! Somebody's mic was out of control there, but there's colorism and racism within their community. And I saw a documentary about Dominica and Haiti and how there was racism against the Haitians, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever, beating people up and stuff like that, this documentary I happened to see. And they were just black Dominicans, real dark looking like they were. So,
That was the whole thing with the former president of the Dominican Republic, Trujillo. He encouraged the races to mix, to have this distinction between the Haitian blacks and the Dominicans, you know? And they bring that propaganda nonsense to the States, you know. Look at the controversy with the Heights, that movie that's out now. I don't know if you're aware, you know, but there's a lot of push back and forth about, you know, whether the cast was dark enough to reflect the neighborhood.
And it's a legitimate question,
no, it wasn't.
It must
right.
be answered. It must be answered in the affirmative, because if we begin to practice what the slave masters did to us, that doesn't make us any better. So we must question our motive. We must question the concept of a Candace Owens who says that a white man can do Martin Luther King Jr. No, he cannot.
Certain people we don't even entertain. I mean,
certain.
I mean that, but that particular issue with the colorism, we got like a minute 40 seconds. But that particular issue, certainly within the Latino community, with the colorism, is huge, right? We know that for a fact.
Huge.
I know that for a fact as well. Anybody from here knows that for.
Yeah.
To jump off. Byron, why don't you give the people your send off, man?
Oh, Bob Spence, I just want to say thank you for celebrating Father's Day, honoring your father. Thank you for honoring Jews in the same breath of honoring fatherhood. Thank you for your constant awareness that it takes a village to raise a village. Keep on keeping on. Black power, use your power. Peace and love always.
There it is for the Bob Saunders legendary. We'll see you again. Talk to you again. Wayne Gilman.
Hey, man, I realized that today is we're on the precipice of the anniversary. You know, I just want to salute your mom and your family and, you know, we just got to keep it going, man. Got to keep this going, you know, conversation.
All right.
Those were her instructions, and, you know, I intend to live by that.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. Talk to you later.
All the best.
There he is, the legendary newsman. All right, this is K-Sun and Friends. I'm K-Sun. It's Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders. Those are my boys. Those are the friends. And we'll talk to you again in the next episode. And my mom, like we said, on assignment up. Talk to you guys later. Our music up.